Yeah, welcome to the double feature double cross. Oh, wait, sorry. I did not double cross you guys. I'm not supposed to laugh like that yet. Again, thanks for listening to the double feature double cross. My name is John O'Connor, and I'm a comic in New York, and every week I do a podcast episode about something I really love. And I review a movie that I have lied about seeing. And I've lied about seeing probably 80% of the movies I've ever talked about to anybody. Just because I hate being judged by people when, you know, you have that conversation with someone where they're like, you know that part in Heat when De Niro? And you're like, no. And they yell at you. It's like, sorry, I didn't have the same life as you. I apologize. So anyway, instead of dealing with that, I just decided it was easier to lie about it. So I'm trying to undo that, and I've started watching movies that all these people have told me are great. So that's what we're going to do this week. If you listened, this is only the second episode. If you listened to the first one, thanks for tuning in again. I got a lot of great feedback about the first episode. So thank you, everybody. Also, I just wanted to apologize for the time between these episodes, because I ended up between Christmas and working double shifts nonstop and traveling from New York to New England for the holidays and stuff. I ended up kind of waiting until the last day to record the last episode, and I ended up getting sick the day before, really sick, and I was sick for like 6 days or something. So I would like to apologize that I kept you guys waiting for so long. I say you guys as if there's like a legion of fans. This is the second episode. Three people I apologize to. See there? I'm still sick. But this week I'm actually pretty excited for, because typically I do a tribute episode. The idea that I had when I started the podcast was I would do it for like a, you know, something old school, kind of something that I liked from a long time ago. But this time around, and I had that actual plan. The truth is, this episode has changed like three times, I think. I've changed the tribute thing, and I've changed the movie just because certain reasons. It had to do with timing, and, you know, the day I was going to do it was going to be an anniversary of something, but then I got sick, so I didn't want to do it on the anniversary. And then this other thing happened that I thought was really cool. So this week, for the tribute episode, I'm going to be talking about a wrestling match that, thank you for half of you already leaving. I get that wrestling is stupid if you don't watch it, but if you do watch it, it can be a lot of fun. And just recently, just on January 4th, just the other day, had a really cool match that happened. It was like this it was like a dream match with something that was never supposed to happen. And Chris Jericho faced Kenny Omega at New Japan Pro Wrestling's Wrestle Kingdom 12. And people are raving about it. Got a lot of positive reviews, a lot of positive reactions. I thought personally that it was, I'll get into the hype in a couple of minutes, but for something that was this hyped to meet the hype or exceed it or whatever, it wasn't necessarily easy to pull off, but I thought it was absolutely spectacular. People are raving about it, like I said. I'm going to discuss it, what led to it, why it's significant, and again, some of the reviews are saying that it was the match of the night on that show, you know, best in show, which is perfect, because the movie I watched this week was Best in Show. what a happy little payoff. Oh, man, I love how that came together like a neat little package with a ribbon on it. So this is your one and only spoiler alert. I'm going to be talking about Alpha versus Omega. That's Kenny versus Jericho. And I'm going to be talking about Best in Show right here on the Double Feature Double Cross. All right, so to start out, we're going to talk about the match, Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega at Wrestle Kingdom 12 for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Now, to give you a little bit of background, if you're not a wrestling fan, or if you are but you didn't hear about this or whatever, basically, if you've never heard of Kenny Omega, and please understand, I just found out about him like within the last year. Kenny Omega is this wrestler that wrestles for New Japan, and he's been wrestling there for a long time, and he's like he's the man. They have their champion, Kazuchika Okada, and that guy is awesome. Kenny's had a couple of spectacular matches with him, but Kenny is, from what I've read and from what I've heard wrestlers talk about, and from what I've seen in interviews and stuff in Japan, like, wrestling is treated a little bit differently than it is in America. The fans there treat it with like a higher degree of reverence, and it's really respected. And Kenny Omega is a Canadian wrestler, but he's very much respected in Japan, not exclusively because he usually has the match of the night, but also specifically because he's a foreigner in Japan that speaks Japanese fluently, which isn't necessarily always the case for professional wrestlers over there that aren't Japanese. So Kenny's kind of like got this honorary status to him, and he's very much respected. Like I said, he's the man. I've watched a few of his matches. He's been absolutely outstanding every time I've seen him perform. Right now, in New Japan Pro Wrestling, as of, what day is it here? It is January 6th, 2018. So, Happy New Year, everybody. Forgot to mention that to you at the top of the show. Happy effing New Year. Hope it's going great so far. I bet you've been at the gym every day, just like me. Haha, that's not true. Anyway, right now, Kenny Omega is signed to New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's the reigning IWGP. That's the International, I believe it's International Wrestling Grand Prix. It's also the New Japan title. He's the IWGP, United States Heavyweight Champion. He's also the first person to hold that title. They had a tournament last year where Kenny won it, and he won that belt. So he's the current U.S. champion over in New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's also a former Intercontinental Champion over there in IWGP. Two-time Junior Heavyweight Champion, one-time Junior Heavyweight Tag Champion, and a two-time never open weight six-man tag team champion. In addition to that, he won every year. New Japan holds a tournament called the G1, and Kenny was the first. You have to understand, for the biggest wrestling company in Japan, Kenny Omega is the first person that was not Japanese to win it. So, yeah, all wrestling is like just a show, and they already know who's going to win going into the matches, but for them to say, like, we're going to let this guy do that, you know, it's a pretty big deal over there. So he's absolutely awesome. Back on November 5th, he had just finished wrestling a match, and he retained his title, and it was the end of the show, I'm pretty sure. So he was he had the microphone, and he was talking to the audience, and he was telling the audience in Japanese, like, you know, I've beaten everybody. There's no one else for me to beat. Please, please, give me someone to face, you know? And but no one answers the call. No one comes out to face him. So he does his, you know, most wrestlers have like a little shtick they do. So Kenny's is goodbye and goodnight, and he does this gun thing. Because he's the leader of the Bullet Club. They're like supposed to be a team of gangsters, you know, type of a kind of a thing. So anyway, it goes goodbye and good night, and then the lights go out, and all of a sudden this video starts playing, and it's a countdown on the video, like a 5, 4, 3, but as that's happening, it's cut, and it's got like shots of the city, and, you know, I think it's like some outside stuff, I forget, but so it cuts down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and it ends, and then when it ends, after like 5 seconds maybe of darkness, all of a sudden, poof, there's a guy standing there on the screen. And he's staring down into the arena at Kenny Omega. And it's Chris Jericho. And the whole crowd is like, what? And I know you might be saying, who's Chris Jericho? Chris Jericho is arguably one of the best pro wrestlers that's ever existed. He's awesome. He can do it all. He can be funny. He can talk on the microphone and give you a good promo. He can wrestle an incredible match with almost anybody, or probably anybody. He's got a great move set. He can jump. He can, you know, as a wrestler, he can do technical wrestling. He can do brawling. He can do high flying stuff. He's very athletic. He's very acrobatic. You know, he's also like a rock star. His band Fozzy tours with, you know, he's toured with, they opened for Metallica and shit like that. Like, it's, you know, he's done it all. So He also, since 1999, he's only ever wrestled for WWE, which is the biggest wrestling company in the world, and it's here in America. But, you know, Chris Jericho, he wrestled for all the, you know, he started wrestling, I think, when he was 18 or 20. He toured all over. He went to Japan. He spent years in Japan. He spent, you know, I don't know about years, but at least some time in Mexico. I'm pretty sure years in Mexico. So he wrestled all over the world. Then he came to America, and he wrestled for all the big promotions, ECW, WCW, and then eventually WWE. And since 1999, he's wrestled exclusively with WWE. And in WWE, he's done everything. He's done everything. He's been a 9-time Intercontinental Champion, 7-time Tag Team Champion, 6-time World Champion. Like, he's done it all. He's the man. He can do it all. It's why he's a great performer. He's dynamic. He can basically do everything. So, also, he's a WWE guy. So, to be on the other side of the planet watching Kenny Omega cut a promo, and then all of a sudden here's Jericho's face staring down at him. As a wrestling fan, even if you don't follow the other company, you at least know who the people are. So here's Chris Jericho, and he's looking at Kenny Omega, and the whole crowd's kind of like this, like, ooh, they've all kind of gasped, you know? And then he holds up this picture, and it's a picture of Kenny Omega, and the crowd goes like, oh. Wrestling is funny because it's a thing where if you have friends that don't watch it and they sit with you and they watch it, you just have to be like, hey, just so you know, this won't make sense. This show won't make sense. But if you can just embrace the fact that this show won't make sense sometimes, you might enjoy the show. And that's kind of what wrestling is just, you know, the lights go out in an arena and that's like a dastardly move. What happened? Someone turned the lights out. Like, it's the silliest, most basic thing, but it always gets a crowd to go, oh. So anyway, there's Jericho when he's on the screen and he's holding a picture of Kenny Omega, and he starts talking to Kenny Omega. And he says something like, you know, Kenny Omega, what a tremendous performer. What a dynamic performer. And he's talking, he's complimenting him, and then he says, but he's not the best in the world. I am. I'm the best in the world. I'm the alpha of this business. And he said, so many wrestlers have claimed to be the best in the world. Shawn Michaels, Edge, CM Punk, and they're all gone. But I'm still here because I'm the alpha of this business, and I'm the best in the world. And I want to prove it. And I'm challenging you, Kenny. And the whole crowd was like, what the fuck? And he goes, Jericho versus Kenny. Alpha versus Omega, which I thought was fucking comic book level supervillain shit. I thought that was spectacular. Alpha versus Omega. I loved it. Alpha versus Omega. I want to meet you January 4th at Wrestle Kingdom 12 in the Tokyo Dome. And Wrestle Kingdom 12, well, Wrestle Kingdom is New Japan Pro Wrestling's WrestleMania. That's their biggest show of the year. So immediately, everybody that watches wrestling, everybody that, you know, I shouldn't say everybody, but oftentimes people that, you know, read the behind-the-scenes stuff online or the rumor mill, or they follow wrestlers on social media, it was like it was within a day that everyone knew, like, what the fuck, Jericho's in New Japan, like, how did that happen? He's been in WWE since 99. But it was a deal where he was going on tour with his band, and his contract with WWE was up, and he, you know, they, someone had brokered this deal for them, and he took it. So I loved it. I thought that was spectacular. And of course, Kenny, you know, back in the ring, the video ends, and Kenny answers Jericho in Japanese, and he, you know, he accepts, and everybody roars, and they all cheer, because it's like, all right, here's this dude. If he's not the best wrestler in the world, he's easily top two, three if you're nitpicky, maybe, but he's easily in the top two, probably potentially the top guy. I'd say it's him or AJ Styles. I don't know. But anyway, so they make the match, and, you know, the internet kind of gets buzzing about it. And then, I don't know how long later it was, like a week later or a couple weeks later, Kenny was in the ring again, and he's talking, and then the lights go out, and there's a new video, and it's Jericho again. And it's Jericho talking shit to him. And when the lights come back on now Jericho's in the ring, standing behind him. And so, of course, the crowd's going crazy. And Jericho beats him up, and they do a whole thing where he hits him with the U.S. title. And Kenny gets, you know, his head gets cut open. And it was, in WWE in America, they don't, oftentimes in the major wrestling shows in America now, you don't get to see blood. It used to be commonplace. Not commonplace, but it used to just be accepted. If somebody got cut open during the match, you just kept going. And a lot of the times, part of wrestling was oftentimes guys would, you know, hide a razor blade and they'd do it themselves. But because that way it made the match look more gruesome. It made the whole thing look more barbaric, I guess. It looked like more of a fight. It looked realer, I guess. So they don't, in WWE, they don't let that happen anymore. Now they stop the match and they glue the guy back together or do whatever. But in New Japan, they still do it. So there's Kenny and he's bleeding. And I mean, Jericho went really over the top with the villain shit. Like he rubbed his hand across Kenny's forehead. He's bleeding everywhere. And he wiped the blood like across his face. He took more blood. He like wiped it across the title. He beat the crap out of him type of a thing. It was really like, oh, Jesus, like, he's going for the throat here. It's pretty vicious. So I don't know how long later it was, Jericho. In New Japan, they do it. I like the way they do stuff there because in WWE, they have more of like a casual, like, I'm so-and-so, and I'm here to interview you. What do you think about this? And they give him the microphone. In New Japan, they have a press conference after the event, like, as if you were in the World Series. How did this game go? You know, and they have reporters there and stuff. So Jericho's in there at the event, and he's at the press conference, and Kenny crashes into the room and, you know, throws him over the podium and all this other shit and beats him up. So they did a great job building the matchup, and people were really, really excited about it. And you also have to understand, like, if you don't watch wrestling or I don't know if you think wrestling's stupid, the only way I can equate this is, like, to say it's pretty rare nowadays to have a match that you never thought would happen, because kind of the end game is WWE. So they're the big cheese. Anybody they really want to get, they can go get. They've got the money. They can pay these people. So that's the biggest stage in the world. So if there's a wrestler out there that they think should be on their stage, they just go get that wrestler, and then they bring them in usually, and they have them face a big star. But to have a wrestler leave the biggest stage in the world to go wrestle another wrestler who is one of the best wrestlers in the world on a smaller, you know, when I say smaller stage, I don't mean it in a bad way. I just mean it is. Demographically, it's a smaller audience over there. But it was really cool because it's like, holy shit, like one of WWE's like greatest of all time, like one of the best performers, most decorated and celebrated performers they've ever had. I don't want to say left there for New Japan, but basically kind of broke all the rules and went over to New Japan to have a match. And the closest thing I can equate it to is like McGregor and Mayweather. That whole, I know Floyd Mayweather was a boxer and that Conor McGregor is an MMA fighter. And he could probably box again if he wanted to. He did a good job against Mayweather, I thought, but that's kind of the closest thing I can say. It's two different sports, and even though wrestling's, you know, it was two different companies, but it was very, very, very shocking. It was so much so that, like, the idea had never occurred to me, really, or to anybody. And it was awesome. It was a huge surprise. I was very, very excited for it when it came around. They had an intro package with Jericho and Kenny kind of talking about each other and why, you know, one guy's better than the other and all this other stuff. And I have to say that I think that one thing that gets passed up in wrestling and kind of gets overlooked is like the showmanship of it. Whether it's man or woman, doesn't matter. The showmanship behind it is pretty solid, and you have to, like, I don't think a lot of people appreciate just me doing stand-up and watching what wrestlers do. Like, obviously I can't fathom the physical component of it, but to watch them, like, react to a crowd and to, like, watch the things they do to get the audience to react, I'm always amazed by it and always impressed by it. And Jericho, of course, he is like one of the coolest ring entrances. He, you know, the lights go out and they play a countdown, and then it, you know, a camera's there on the ramp, and all of a sudden he always wears this, like, not always, but for a few years now, he's been wearing this like light up jacket with all these lights and all these designs all over it. It looks pretty cool. And, you know, he lets the pattern run for a little bit, and then he turns around and walks down to the ramp, and he was totally in full bad guy mode. It was pretty fun to watch. He's that's the other thing about Jericho, is he's funny. So as a good guy slash baby face, whatever you want to call it, he's great, because anything the bad guy, the heel character, says to him, he can just chop him right back. And then as a heel, as a bad guy, he's awesome. He's really great, because he can be the rigid, void of personality character, that evil character. But he can also be that like real wuss kind of crybaby heel character too, which I think is great. He can do it all. So he came down, he was in this like really arrogant, I've done it all type of character mode. He went down to the ring, and you know, the crowd still cheered for him, because he cut his teeth in Japan, and they all know it, because they, like I said, they all, the fans there take it very seriously in comparison with America. So they all knew that he had been there. They all knew that he cut his teeth there. They all knew that he also was a great performer, and he went on to win all sorts of titles all around the world. So they were excited to see him. And then, of course, Kenny Omega, I think, is a pretty cool wrestler, because his gimmick, his kind of persona, a lot of it's based around video games, which I'm a huge sucker for video games. I've liked them ever since I was a little kid. And a lot of Kenny's like moves and a lot of his aesthetic, like his merchandise and the names of his moves and his merchandise and that kind of stuff, it's all based around video games. A lot of his persona is based around video games. So anyway, he comes down to the ring, and he's wearing like this Anubis looking kind of, you know, Egyptian almost wolf helmet and a cape, and he's got this gun with him and all this crazy kind of over the top stuff. But I love it. I love the pageantry of it. And I read somewhere that the gimmick, the outfit that he had on was based on the video game Destiny 2, that kind of game's right up my alley. I have not played it, but I heard it's awesome. And, you know, Kenny loves video games, so he was dressed up as this character from the video game Destiny 2. And he looked pretty badass, I thought. Maybe kind of silly, too. I don't know. If you don't watch wrestling, if you turned it on, you'd be like, what the fuck is this? It's this guy's wearing a dog head for no reason. Why is he doing that? But anyway, and he's got a fake gun. Why would you bring a fake gun to the... Anyway. So, Kenny's got his Destiny gear on, and the match starts with... Kenny's part of this group called the Bullet Club, which is supposed to be the biggest bad guy heel group in the company, but it's like some other bad guy groups. When it's like any good villain, it's like you like Darth Vader, you like Boba Fett, you like the Joker, you like all these characters, you like Magneto. You like them because they're a character that, even though they're evil, you might be able to relate to part of what they think or feel. And the, you know, the Bullet Club is basically that. They're kind of supposed to be gangsters, but it's kind of loose. Just a cool group. I don't know. But anyway, the Young Bucks are like this awesome tag team, and they were on the show that night, and they were there walking Kenny to the ring like they always do. And before the match starts, they're going to hug Kenny, wish him good luck. And as they're doing that, Jericho attacks him, you know. And of course, then the ref gets in there, and then all these in Japan, they have like all these ring attendants, I guess you'd call them, like all around the ring. So all these guys get in, and they try to break it up, and the Young Bucks try to break it up. So they have this kind of big schmoz start to the match. What I liked about it was the match, and this is something that doesn't always happen in wrestling, but the match like started fast and then slowed down and then kind of built, which I thought was cool. Started with a little bit of back and forth, and then like 2 minutes in, Jericho catches him in one of his, like, if you don't watch wrestling, everybody's got like one or two or sometimes three finishing moves. So like it's a little cue for the audience when they put this person in this move, you know, oh shit, this might be it, this might be where it ends. So like 2 minutes in, he puts him in a Boston Crab, which he calls the Walls of Jericho. And of course, you know, the crowd's like, oh shit, he's already got him in the finishing move. Like, that's, oh damn it, really quick. And one of the rules in wrestling is if you're in a submission and you grab the bottom rope, you have until if you're in a submission hold and you grab the bottom rope, the person that has you in the move, the ref is supposed to count to five. Wait, they already got ropes. 1, 2, 3, 4. And if you don't break the hold by five, they can disqualify you and the match will end. this was a no disqualification match. So Kenny's in the Walls of Jericho, and he crawls over to the bottom rope, and he gets it, and the ref starts counting, and Jericho looks at him. He's like, there's no DQ. Like, I can keep him in this move as long as I want. So I thought that was kind of cool. I was like, oh, yeah, shit, that's right. These guys, you know, if they get him in a submission hold, they can't get out of it. So anyway, the match moves outside, and, like, they kind of go back and forth. And within the first 5 minutes of the match, they have not been wrestling for, I don't think, 5 minutes. Jericho goes over the barrier, and he's out by the announce tables. Kenny Omega runs. He does, like, a springboard to the top rope, and he jumps from the top rope over the railing and crashes through the announce table. Like, 5 minutes into the match, he's already gone through the American announce table at New Japan Pro Wrestling Wrestle Kingdom. I thought that was spectacular. 5 minutes in. So anyway, now that he's down, Jericho grabs him and puts him in the Walls of Jericho again. So then the referee comes over and starts yelling at Jericho. Jericho slaps the referee, and it's no DQ, so you can assault the referee if you want. So he slaps the referee, and then, I didn't know this watching it, but the announcers were calling it. One of the ring attendants runs over and starts yelling at Jericho, and I guess it's the referee's son. So Jericho hits the kid. He's like 18 or 19, he's got to be. So he hits that kid, and then he puts him in the Walls of Jericho. Like, classic wrestling bad guy shit. I thought it was fucking awesome. And then, of course, Kenny, now that he's not in a submission hold, gets up and kicks Jericho, breaks it up. They work through basically the rest of the tables all the way down the line. There's like three or four announce tables. They don't, like, crash through all of them, but they kind of smash through the area. And eventually, Kenny gets Jericho down, and he takes a table, and he pulls it and leaves it on top of Chris Jericho, who's, like, laying on the ground outside. And then he climbs a scaffold, like, 8 feet in the air. It might not have been 8 feet. I don't know how high he climbed up. But he climbed up at least, I'd say, 6 feet in the air. And then he jumped off and, like, stomped right onto the table, like, right on the one that Chris Jericho was underneath. And I was like, oh, Jesus. It's like, now it's like not even 10 minutes in, and Kenny's gone through an announce table, and then he thunder stomped Jericho through. I thought it was awesome. So anyway, they move back inside the ring, and one of the spots that I've always loved that Chris Jericho does in a match is he'll run. Wrestling doesn't make sense, because if wrestling, it's one of those deals where if it was an actual contest, like a physical contest, if someone just grabbed you by the arm and threw you, you wouldn't run and then hit the ropes and then run back and then hit the other ropes. And then, like, that whole component of wrestling, again, like I said in the beginning, a lot of it doesn't make sense. The whole running the ropes never made sense to me, but it also makes the match more exciting and fast-paced and dynamic. So, anyway, one of the spots Jericho used to do is he would run and he would jump and he would land on the middle rope, because there's three in a wrestling ring. He would run and jump and land on the middle rope near the corner, and then he would turn around and jump off of that and, like, dropkick somebody on the side of the ring. So Kenny Omega was standing on the outside of the ring, but standing on it and, like, waiting to jump back in. And as he was going to do a springboard, Jericho ran and hit the ropes and turned around and jumped and dropkicked him and knocked him off the ropes, which I thought was a cool spot that I had never seen. I'd seen Jericho do a bunch of those moves, but never in that spot. So they spill to the outside again. You know, he hurts Kenny's knee with that drop kick. He grabs a table and sets it up outside on the floor. So he picks up Kenny because he's going to powerbomb him through the table. But Kenny, like, fights out of it. And then instead, Jericho turns around because he can't get the powerbomb on the table. So he turns around and powerbombs him right on the floor. It looked pretty painful. I didn't... I was glad it was not me on the receiving end of that. It looked pretty rough. So anyway, he grabs a couple chairs, throws them in the ring. There's all these press, like all these cameramen and media people at ringside. He grabs one of the cameras from the guy and he starts taking pictures of Kenny Omega on the floor. He, like, flips off the crowd. He's, like, taking pictures of that. Just more, you know, bad guy shit. He gets it back inside the ring and he sets up this chair, like, in the corner of the ropes. And I don't know how to explain it except to say that the chair was parallel to the ring post. So, like, if you ran and you dove headfirst into the corner, your head would smash, like, right into the seat of the chair. That was how it was set up. So he set up that chair in the corner. They have a little bit of back and forth. And then Jericho hits the Lion Salt, which is like a He hits that second rope. He does a backflip, and he splashes the guy in the middle of the ring. So it was like, again, like now they're 10 minutes into the match, and he's hit two finishing moves on him already. And so Kenny gets out of it. They go back to the outside. Kenny throws Jericho outside. Jericho's on the ramp. Kenny runs and hits the far rope. He runs back and jumps over the top rope, hits a swanton bomb, which is basically like a delayed front flip. Smashes right onto Jericho, knocks him off the ramp. It was like, to watch it at full speed, it's weird to see something look so graceful, but then no, like, there's no padding out there on the ring. They're just hitting the ramp. Like, Jesus Christ. It looked pretty painful, but it looked awesome, too. It was really cool. So he hits the top rope swanton. They go back inside. Kenny hits this move, like, I don't think I've ever seen him do it. It's called, like, the Kentaro Crusher. He, like, comes flying over the top of the guy and smashes his head onto the ground or some shit. It was awesome. But, again, going back to it, they never hit that table that Jericho set up that's still out there on the floor. And just like a gun in the first act, you know that shit's coming back. So, anyway, hits this Kentaro Crusher. Then he goes for this move called the V-Trigger, which is like a... Kenny is like a super fast... He's like... I don't know how big he is of a guy, but he's something like 6 feet and like 205 pounds. But he's ripped. He's shredded. So he's an athlete. So he looks really fast. He hits the ropes and he comes flying back and he just bang. He throws this knee up and he always wears these like leather tights. So in wrestling, one of the things you want to do is if you have leather tights, leather pants or whatever you wear, you always want to like slap your leg when you do a move like that to make it sound like you had this big impact on the move. So he goes to do the V-trigger and knee Jericho in the head, but Jericho counters, puts him in the walls of Jericho again. He goes for a pin attempt, can't get it. There's another, like a roll through or a reversal. Jericho puts him back in the walls. They work into the corner, and he's got Kenny in the walls of Jericho. Kenny crawls to the corner, and he reaches under the ring, and he grabs this spray. It's called, like, cold spray. I guess it's like a gimmick that they do where, like, it's like a weapon they use to, like, I don't know. Kind of mob mentality shit just to torture their enemies. They spray these guys in the eyes, you know, with like a aerosol can. So, of course, Jericho breaks the move and everybody's like, you know, the announcers are screaming like, cold spray! Ah! So Kenny sprays Jericho with it. But then I love it because one of the things about wrestling is like, you know, like if cold spray gets used on guys all the time in the story, cold spray is a thing where, you know, it hurts. It hurts to get cold sprayed. So what I loved was that he sprayed Jericho down, and Jericho's, oh, my eyes, I can't see. And he sprayed Jericho down, and then he's laying there still recovering from the attack. But then he starts spraying himself with the cold spray. So the crowd starts cheering, and then he, like, pulls his leather pants out, sprays down at his crotch, makes this big wild face. You know, the crowd laughed and kind of popped for it. And I, like, that's the kind of shit I love about wrestling. It's just like, it's this very formulaic thing where, I don't know how to explain it all, but wrestling is formulaic. So to take something like cold spray, which is always used against your enemy, and then to spray it on yourself to be like, I don't give a shit, I'm crazy. Also, let me spray my dick. I thought that was so funny. I loved it. I thought it was spectacular. Jericho shoves the ref. That knocks the ref down, and then he takes Kenny, and he throws Kenny, and then Kenny hits that chair that was still set up in the corner in the ropes. He smashes his head right on it. They have a little bit of back and forth, and then Jericho gets him with, like, two more of the headshots, a little back and forth, another headshot with the chair, and then Kenny's bleeding, and he's bleeding out of his forehead. Jericho gets him again with the chair in the corner. Wham! Kenny starts fighting back. He hits these, like, snapdragon suplexes, which I don't know how to describe them to you. You could just YouTube them, I guess. So then he hits a few of them. He kind of gets control of the match, and he comes flying off the rope. And Jericho, in like a desperation move, picks up a chair and just cracks him like right in the head. It was a loud shot. It was pretty good. So now the crowd's cheering because now both guys are down. They're both tired. They're both kind of beaten up. The chair actually broke when he hit Kenny with it. So Jericho grabs a new chair. He gets a couple more shots on Kenny. Breaks that one. He takes the frame of the chair, because that's all that's left, because, like, the seat part of it popped out of it. He takes the frame of the chair. He comes off the top rope with it, smashes Kenny. So Kenny's there, like, basically dead now. And then all of a sudden he reaches up and he just grabs Jericho. So the crowd starts cheering because it's a whole, you know, the whole story is now he's like, you can't keep me down, buddy. I'm fighting back here. So he grabs Jericho. The crowd starts cheering because he's still alive. Hits him with the frame again. Takes the frame to the top rope like he's going to jump off the top rope and hit Kenny with it. And he starts taunting the crowd because the crowd, you know, a lot of the fans will, especially women, will cheer, Kenny, Kenny. So Jericho's got the frame on the top rope, and he's looking out at the crowd, and he's going, Kenny, Kenny. And while he's up there taunting, Kenny gets up, and he runs, and I think I said he had the frame. Now he had a full chair. So he's up there with the full chair, and he's yelling, Kenny. Kenny runs and jumps and drop kicks him. He drop kicks him, and the chair goes flying off. Jericho, who's standing on the outside of the ring on the second rope, like, falls, but, like, catches himself. And I've never seen any people that are listening to this, if you watch wrestling, I've never seen this wrestling spot before where, like, a guy's on the second rope outside, gets drop kicked, falls, but stays on the second rope with their feet and holds the top rope with their two hands to then pull themselves back up. It looked so awesome. It looked so athletic. So he drop kicks him. Jericho stays on the rope. But then Kenny runs and hits the rope again and does another drop kick. And of course, like I said, like a gun in the first act, you knew that table was coming back. Jericho crashes through the table outside on the floor. Everybody's going crazy. I thought it was a really cool, really cool spot. But Kenny goes outside. He gets him, throws him back in the ring, hits another V-trigger knee. He goes for this, like, pile driver. I don't even know how to describe this pile driver. It was like an inside-out, backwards pile driver. He, like, hits that, goes for the pin, doesn't get it. Kenny's move is called the One-Winged Angel, which is, like, a reference to Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII. Sephiroth is, in video games, I think, is of all the video games I played, he was one of the most badass villains in any video game I ever played. So I think that's a pretty rad. Wrestling finishing moves all have a name, which is kind of silly. It's like, what move did he hit? But anyway, his is the One-Winged Angel. I don't know how to describe it to you, but he basically comes up behind the guy, ducks under him, and picks him up so the guy is sitting on top of his shoulders. Like, imagine if you brought your little kid to the parade and they couldn't see. So you set them up on top of your shoulders so they could see. That's basically what he does. He gets behind the guy in, like, this electric chair, they call it. Gets him up in an electric chair, reaches up and pulls the guy's head down, and then falls and kind of smashes the guy on the mat in like a kind of like a pile driver type move. It's pretty cool looking move. So he goes for the One-Winged Angel, but that gets countered into the walls of Jericho. And this part of the match was actually the only part of the match where, like, I actually fell for it and I got into the match to the point where I was like, oh shit, is he really going to lose? Because you have to understand, like, Chris Jericho doesn't really wrestle for New Japan. So to have him come in and beat their United States champion for that title doesn't make any sense. Because now what? Now he's just going to leave with the title? So the whole time, even though I didn't know who was going to win, I kind of figured it was going to be Kenny Omega just because it made sense from a story standpoint. You know, like, all right, well, this guy's the man. They're not going to bring some guy in to just beat him and then leave. They're going to, if he's going to come in and wrestle him, it would make sense to have Kenny win. So he counters the One-Winged Angel, and he gets him back in the walls of Jericho, Boston Crab. And this was the only part of the match where I actually thought Kenny might lose. So he crawls to the ropes, and it tries to break it up, and then Jericho pulls him back into the middle of the ring, and he sinks into the Lion Tamer. And the Lion Tamer is, Jericho used to use it when he was young, like, when he was in, like, his late 20s, he would put guys in the Lion Tamer. And the Lion Tamer is basically the same move as the Boston Crab. It's just that instead of, if you Google Boston Crab, you'll see that, like, you're kind of, like, squatting like a catcher with the guy's legs. The guy's on his stomach, and you've got the guy's legs in your arms, and you're sitting on top of him. And you're kind of bending the guy in a pretzel a little bit. With the Lion Tamer, it's the same idea, except that instead of being flat on your stomach, the guy's, like, pressed down, like, on the top of his chest, like, on his throat, basically. So he's, like, kneeling on the guy's, like, head. He's got the guy's legs in his hands, and the guy's body is basically vertical. It looks painful. It's part of why he doesn't do it anymore. It's just because it's so, even though it's a show, like, to endure that move is just painful. So Instead, he does the Boston Crab move, but then he actually goes old school. He puts him in the Lion Tamer. Kenny makes it to the ropes, and this is the only part of the match that I didn't get. He gets to the ropes, and the ropes break. Like, Jericho breaks the hold, even though it's a no DQ match. So I don't know if the story was supposed to be that Jericho was so tired that he had to let him go. So anyway, he breaks the hold. Jericho goes for a move, one of his other finishing moves called the Code Breaker, which is he's facing the guy, he jumps up and like puts his knees on the guy's face and grabs the guy's head and falls backwards. So the guy bends over at the waist and falls forward and smashes his face right onto Jericho's knees. So he goes for the Code Breaker, but Kenny counters it into a V trigger. Then he picks him up for the One-Winged Angel and he hits it. And in New Japan, the One-Winged Angel is a move that none of the wrestlers that have ever faced Kenny Omega, none of them have ever kicked out of it. So anytime Kenny Omega's ever hit the One-Winged Angel, he's won the match. With the exception of, this was the second time he had not won it when he hit the move. And basically, previously, when he faced Okada, he hit the One-Winged Angel, and the crowd went crazy, and they counted one, two, and Okada grabbed the bottom rope. And if you're in a pin and you grab the rope in wrestling, if you even touch the rope, it breaks up the pin. So of course it's a cool way to break the momentum of the moment in wrestling. So here it is. He hits the One-Winged Angel, and then one, two, and Jericho grabs the ropes. Which I also love this part because the rope break is I like that they took that rule in wrestling and cut it in half here. Because like in wrestling, like I said earlier, if it's a regular match and you're in a submission hold and you grab the bottom rope or you grab any rope, they have to break the hold. But it's a no DQ match, so that rule goes out the window. However, if you're getting pinned and you grab the bottom rope, it still breaks it up, which I thought was cool. I like that they cut that rule in half and let half of it apply. And again, like it was he grabbed the rope just like Okada had done. So it was kind of a cool callback, like, oh, Kenny, he made the same mistake again, you know. So anyway, Kenny goes up to the top rope. Jericho crotches him, so he pushes him. Kenny lands crotch first on the corner. And then Jericho climbs up to the top rope to, like, jump up and, I don't know how to explain it, but, like, do a Hurricane Rana. So, like, jump up, wrap your legs around the guy's head and do a backflip, and the guy will flip over with you. So he goes to do that, but Kenny counters it and smashes Jericho's face right into the top of the turnbuckles there. Kenny does this move where he picks the guy up into a fireman's carry, so he's got the guy over his shoulders, and he rolls through to smash the guy, jumps up in the middle rope, does a backflip, and then hits a moonsault. So when he goes to do that, Jericho rolls out of the way. Kenny turns around and goes charging at him to hit him, and Jericho hits the Code Breaker. So Jericho picks up a chair. He's trying to keep this guy down. He hits him with two chair shots, and he's yelling at him, stay down, stay down. He goes to the ropes again to hit the Lion Salt, and Kenny gets up and throws the chair and smashes Jericho with it on the ropes. So now Jericho's kind of stuck there on the middle two ropes, just kind of hovering, and Kenny sneaks up behind him to put him in the One-Winged Angel hold again, and he gets it this time. And it was so impressive to watch because, like, he's got this – Jericho's got to be at least 220 pounds – at least. So he's got this 220-pound guy on his shoulders after this huge, long, half-an-hour match. And without even looking, he just grabs the chair, like, with his foot and slides it, like, a few feet away from the ropes. And then he turns around, and he stands there just long enough for the crowd to realize, oh, fuck, the chair is there on the ground. And then, bang, he hits the One-Winged Angel, 1, 2, 3, and the crowd goes nuts. And Kenny Omega retains the U.S. title for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Alpha versus Omega, Kenny versus Jericho, Wrestle Kingdom 12. It's one of those deals where a lot of the times in life, the hype just doesn't meet up to whatever you're hoping for. And I thought this match just exceeded it. I thought it was awesome. Jericho, I think Chris Jericho is 48 years old, I think. He might be a little younger, or he might be a little older, I don't know. Either way, he's almost 50, either way. And a guy who was almost 50 got into the ring with probably the best or second best wrestler in the entire world. And they had a spectacular match. Absolutely spectacular show. I couldn't have been happier with it, I don't think. I thought it was awesome. To me, the craziest thing about it is that, like, WWE, which is the biggest wrestling company in the world, has WrestleMania in April, in the first weekend of April, I think. And that's, what, 3-4 months from now? February, March, April. So 3 months from now. And in 3 months from now, the biggest wrestling company in the world will not have a match that's bigger than this match. They just won't. Because anybody they have is going to be, it's going to be two wrestlers from their company. There'll be nothing more exciting. There'll be nothing that they can do that'll be a bigger surprise or a cooler attraction than this one. So I was really excited to see it. I thought it was spectacular. And I think it also opens the door for a lot of, you know, there's a lot of great wrestling talent, like on the independent circuit, on like the on the lower, smaller promotions. And I think this will open the door for a lot of those talents that aren't able to get to WWE. I think it'll maybe offer them a chance to go to New Japan and do some stuff there. Or potentially anybody in WWE that maybe doesn't like what's going on or they don't feel like they're being used, maybe they'll be able to go to New Japan. And now that New Japan has the streaming service, people will be able to see the matches. So I thought it was great. I thought it was great for New Japan. I thought it was great for Jericho. I thought it was great for Kenny. I thought it was great for wrestling on the whole. And I couldn't be happier with it. And the other thing that was cool was the day. So I thought that was it, you know, because, like, it was a big surprise to begin with. The fact that I even got to see it, I was stunned. And then the next day, they have, like, a New Year's-type show. And this guy, Naito, who's awesome, really, really great wrestler. I watched him wrestle for the first time. He wrestled this guy, Okada, for the championship in the match right after Kenny and Jericho. And they had a spectacular match. Kenny and Jericho did, but so did Naito and Okada. I thought it was absolutely awesome. I loved it. So Naito's in the ring the next night, and Jericho comes running through the crowd. What I love, too, is that Jericho wears a fucking headband. He wears this little thin headband, and he comes running through, like, a sleeveless t-shirt, and he comes running through the crowd with, like, a headband and, like, a ponytail, and he just starts laying on a Naito, and all these ring attendants go and break it up. So that's kind of cool. It's kind of exciting because it means, if that's the case, that Jericho's going to get to wrestle Naito not too long from now. So I was really happy to see that. Really psyched about the whole thing. And hopefully we're going to get to see Jericho and Naito in New Japan. And who knows? Maybe we'll get to see a lot of other exciting matches going forward. So anyway, that was Alpha versus Omega. Hope you enjoyed my recanting of it. And from here, we're going to go into our movie review. All right, so this particular movie I have lied about seeing only a few times. But the truth is I was looking for a few different movies, and I had a few different things in mind. And then just kind of based on, you know, I reviewed Die Hard last time, which I loved, and I loved reviewing it. But I didn't want to do another action movie or another blockbuster. I kind of wanted to mix it up and do something different, so and I also wanted to do something. I think this movie is considered great by most people that have seen it, but it's not. I've never heard anybody be like, oh, this movie, that's a classic. That's, you know, I don't hear people regard it in like this elite movie status or anything, but I have to say, I loved it. I thought it was absolutely spectacular. It was called, you know, Best in Show. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that movie. It's a mockumentary, which, I don't know if you've ever seen The Office or Parks and Recreation or Modern Family, but it's that style show where you get to see some, like, live handheld. It's supposed to, it's obviously all fake, but it's supposed to be like a documentary, but it's a funny documentary, basically. So, and the whole idea of the story was it highlighted all of these different people, and it highlighted all these different their lives and where they came from. And they were all people that raised dogs, and they raised dogs to be part of a, you know, like a dog show. I forget the name of the dog show in the film, but they're all, these people are all dog lovers, and they're all going to this dog show where they're all going to try to win Best in Show. And I have to say, I have, one of the things I love about The Office, one of the things I love about Parks and Rec, and Modern Family as well. Admittedly, I have not seen every episode of Modern Family, but Parks and Rec and The Office, I've seen every one of those TV episodes at least twice, probably at least three times, likely even more than that. But what I love about a mockumentary is that oftentimes, because it's presented in this real, you know, in this sense of reality, the characters in the show or the production or whatever it is, they tend to be like really, I feel like really rich and really dense. And I feel like that's what makes any show or movie or book or anything great. If you like the characters or you hate the characters, it makes for what I think is like a really good story. And The Office, I feel like, is like that. Parks and Rec, you know, I feel like that's why the cast worked so well together, because they knew how to play off of each other because they were so entrenched in their characters. And I thought this movie here was just absolutely spectacular. They had really dense, rich, rich characters. And it also was like this really star-studded lineup. Like, I did not realize it before I watched it how many people in the movie were like established actors and like celebrated actors. If you do like The Office or Parks and Rec, this movie is really, really funny. I would highly recommend it. Right off the bat, I think the first shot of the movie, it might be a therapist, but if it's not a therapist, it's Parker Posey, who I have the biggest crush of all time on, so I was already happy immediately right into the film. I did not know she was in it. I also think, I mean, aside from like being a schoolboy about it, like, I think she's a great actress. So she played a character called Meg Swan, and her husband, what was his name? Hamilton Swan. And he was played by Michael Hitchcock, who I've seen Michael Hitchcock in a bunch of stuff. I think he's great. They were, you know, kind of a couple of snobs, and they were in the therapist's office, and they were there talking about, you know, it's kind of a swerve because they're talking about their, someone saw them having sex and they were so broken up about it. And then the camera pans over and there's a dog laying there. And I think they said it was like a, I'm going to mispronounce the name of this dog or this type of dog. Weinariner. It kind of looked like a, I don't know, like a bleach, I don't know how to explain it, like a bleached lab or something. It was a nice looking dog. But anyway, they were like these snobby characters. They were like neurotic and, you know, they kind of ruined their dog's life without realizing it. And then you had Eugene, I don't know if it's Levy or Levy, I forget, but Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, they played Cookie and Gary Fleck. They were this couple from Florida, and they were spectacular, man. Absolutely spectacular. You know, kind of like little small town people, but they had a dedicated group of friends. They had a, what was it, like a Norwich Terrier, and they just loved the dog so much. They loved Terrier so much that they used to just like hang out and write songs together about them. And there's a few spots in the movie where they're singing songs about Terriers. But again, it's all mockumentary, so it's as if they're real people. I thought they crushed it. I absolutely loved it. And then what was also really funny was like Catherine O'Hara's character is named Cookie, and she's throughout the movie, everywhere they go, she basically runs into another guy that she slept with. She slept with like hundreds of guys. And apparently she's like the best lay in the universe because all these guys. And she's kind of like, I don't know, it was one of those things where like I felt bad for Eugene Levy's character just because he's clearly so enamored with his wife. But every guy she runs into, she's basically fucked. And when he's like, hey, remember that time we were in that speedboat? And she's like, oh, she like loves the memory as much as him right in front of the poor guy. I felt so bad for him. And I also thought it was one of the funniest things in the whole movie. This movie was super, super funny. I laughed so hard through a good portion of it. And there's one part where they're describing how they met. And Catherine O'Hara, Cookie is saying to the camera, like, and Gary wouldn't dance with me. And I said, come on, let's dance. And I said, I can't dance. I've got two left feet. And, of course, everyone's heard that expression. And then, you know, Cookie kind of settles down, and she's like, yeah, and I didn't know. And he's like, yeah, she didn't know. But, and the camera pans down, and the guy literally has two left feet. I was born with two left feet, and they used to call me Looper. I used to walk in a circle. It was awesome. Those guys were absolutely spectacular. You had Christopher Guest, who I'm pretty sure was the director on this thing. Yeah, he was. Christopher Guest was the director, but he also played a character called Harlan Pepper, who ran a bait and tackle shop, I think in North Carolina or something. He played an awesome character. He was really, he had that like southern, I don't know how to explain it accurately. He kind of had that southern low-level disposition, where he was always very calm, very put together, and his emotions didn't often range out of that spot. But he was an interesting guy. He was a very funny guy. He had the great accent, and his dog was a bloodhound, and the bloodhound's the greatest dog in the world, the most loyal, the best dog. And he grabbed the dog's face, and he would explain the dog was talking to him through telepathy, and it was spectacular. He was absolutely great. And then we had Michael McKean, who, for my money, is one of the best actors I've ever seen. I don't know if you guys watch Better Call Saul. I'll probably do an episode about that one day. Better Call Saul is one of my favorite TV shows. Michael McKean is awesome on Better Call Saul, and he's playing a guy called Stefan Vanderhoof. And then you've got John Michael Higgins playing Scott Donlan, and they're a gay couple, and they have a Shih Tzu, and these guys are, it's so funny, man. Like, John Michael Higgins, his character is the outrageously over-the-top gay guy, and then Michael McKean's character is, like, the more dialed-in, like, you know, don't make a scene, shh. They're this kind of an odd couple, but they're spectacular together, and they're both really funny. There was a scene in the movie that I just absolutely lost it, where they're getting ready for, I think they're packing to, like, leave to go to Philadelphia for the convention, for the dog show. And John Michael Higgins, he doesn't have very long hair. He's got hair that's, you know, just kind of combed forward, and he's got the bangs spiked up in the front, but they're not extravagantly long. They might be an inch or two. But here they are, like, getting ready for bed, and John Michael Higgins has his bangs. He has his bangs tied up, like, in an elastic. So there's just this little bangs ponytail sticking off the front of his head. Like, as if he's, like, pulling them out of his face, you know? I thought it was so funny. And they have this little beautiful Shih Tzu dog. And then, lastly, you had Sherri-Ann Cabot, who was played by Jennifer Coolidge. And she was basically, like, this beautiful woman who's married to this super old guy who's rich. That was the whole deal. And I don't think I've ever seen Jennifer Coolidge suck in anything. She's always been awesome in anything I've ever seen her. This movie was no exception. She was killing it. She was always, you know, dolled up to the nines. She did her own makeup, so she had this kind of, I don't want to say extreme. When she says in the movie she does her own makeup, you go, okay, that makes sense. And then she'd often wear a tiara around. And then you had the other character, Christy Cummings, who was their dog's trainer. And Christy Cummings was played by Jane Lynch. And Jane Lynch, same thing. Everything I've ever seen her, and she's been great. And they had a poodle. They had this big, tall poodle dog. It was really great. And I have to say that, so basically the story is, you know, you get like a little intro to all of the different characters. And then all of the different characters go to the dog show. And then once they're at the dog show, you know, they each compete because they're all competing separately because they're all different types of dogs. So one's a Norwich Terrier, one's a Shih Tzu, one's a Bloodhound. And all of these dogs, since they're in different categories, they each win each of their own categories. So that by the end of the movie, all of the dogs are there together in what they call the best in show round, which is the final round. And that's the round where you win the cup and the blue ribbon, and with the exception of Parker Posey's dog and Parker Posey and Michael Hitchcock's dog, the weird looking lab mutant who ends up snapping the judges, and it's a whole thing. They were fighting the whole time, really taking it out on each other. It was always the other person's fault that the dog, you know, it was always, you know, they hated each other basically because of this dog, even though they both loved the dog. It was like this misplaced love and delusion. I don't know. It was great, though. They were absolutely awesome. Oh, and I forgot to mention, which I thought was so funny, they both had braces, and they both, the way they described meeting each other in a Starbucks was one of the funniest things. Well, we weren't actually in the same Starbucks. I saw him from a Starbucks that was across the street from the Starbucks I was in. Oh. It was spectacular. But honestly, the two, please understand, if Best in Show was a TV show that I could watch seasons of, I would watch it. I thought it was absolutely awesome. All of the characters I loved. There wasn't a character in the film I didn't love. But my favorite part of the film, my favorite part of the whole film, were that they had, like, you know, welcome to the big, I forget the name of the show, Maple Ground, Maple Grove Dog Show, I forget what it was. But it was welcome to the show, and Fred Willard, who, he's been in a lot of stuff. Fred Willard is a super funny actor. He played this guy called Jim Pittick, and then there was another guy. Oh, no, sorry. Jim Pittick was the other actor. Forgive me. Fred Willard was this kind of ignorant American. You know, he'd ask you a question, and you'd start answering, and he would talk over you. Like, he didn't give a shit about what you thought or said. He'd always make these terrible jokes, like, relentlessly the whole time. Jim Pittick was the other actor, and he was kind of this more buttoned up, took the dog show seriously. I'm pretty sure he's a British dude. So them sitting at the announce table, you got to watch the movie. They had so many funny lines. Fred Willard had so many funny lines. I thought he had the funniest lines in the entire film. Their back and forth was absolutely awesome. And they kept, you know, it was great because it kept getting peppered in. Like, they'd show the dogs, and they'd show the scene with the dogs, and they'd show the dogs doing whatever they needed to do. And while they were doing that, Fred Willard would be doing commentary. Like, yeah, it'd be pretty good if we put, like, a little Sherlock Holmes hat on the dog, you know, give him a little pipe. Why don't they do that? And he's like, well, you know, it's not really the theme of what they... Yeah, I would love that. That would crack me up. I wish they would do it. He just didn't give a shit about what the guy said. He just wanted him to agree with him. I thought it was absolutely awesome. One of the things I loved was, you know, Catherine O'Hara's character was always like, oh, you know, poor Jerry. He's always jealous, and she always kisses him. And it was this funny thing, because, like, even though, I don't know, they kind of, I don't know if inferred is the right word, but they kind of made it look like she probably still runs around on him, maybe. But it's no, there's no doubt that she does still love him. But I did, Eugene Levy's character, I thought, was the most sympathetic in the film. And he was a nice guy. He just felt lucky to have this woman. And he loved his dog, and she loved the dog, so he loved her even more because of it. And they both loved the dog, and at the end, near the end of the movie, right before they're all about to walk out for the Best in Show, you know, typically one of the people walks the dog out into the stadium, into the arena, whatever it is. And Catherine O'Hara walked their dog out into the arena the first two times, and then right before she goes out for the third time, she hurts her knee. And the physical comedy she was doing with her knee, like, giving out, like, shaking out beneath her, was absolutely hilarious. I was losing my shit watching it. So then she tells, you know, Jerry, she's like, she tells Eugene Levy, Jerry, you got to take him out. You got to do this. And at the end of the day, Jerry and Cookie they didn't have any money. That was the other thing. They didn't have any money. They got to the hotel all the way from Florida. They drove. They got to Philly. The credit card got declined. They ended up sleeping in a utility closet that the hotel let them sleep in. And they ended up winning in the Norwich Terrier. And I thought it was awesome. And then the movie cuts to, like, 6 months later. And, you know, they show what each of the characters is dealing with and going through at that point. It's weird because it wasn't, like, a straight plot through it. It was, like, kind of the plot of five or, you know, five couples or you know, eight or nine people all coming together for one story. And then Cookie and Jerry's dog won. But if you guys have never seen Best in Show, I can't recommend it enough. If you like The Office, if you like Parks and Rec or Modern Family or any mockumentary style show, this movie is really funny. Like, the guy, Harlan Pepper, there's one part where Christopher Guest is playing Harlan Pepper. He's also like an aspiring ventriloquist. Like, all of the scenes he did with that shit was so funny. There's one part where he was talking about he grew up in a town called Pine Nut, but ever since he was a little kid, he could list every type of nut. And so then he starts listing it for the camera, like peanut, cashew nut, pine nut. That's also the name of the town, but pine, that's also a real nut. Pine nut. Almond. You know, and he's going on and on about it, and he goes, macadamia nut. And he had said, like, it used to drive my mom crazy. And he would say, macadamia nut. That one's the one that used to send her off the... I thought that was so funny that, like, he's listing out all these different nuts, but the macadamia nut is the one that, like, that was so exotic that would make her crazy. I thought it was spectacularly acted front to back, every person in the movie. Not only were they great as their characters, but they were all super, super, super funny. I absolutely loved it. I can't recommend it to you guys enough. And I think that's it. I think that's the end of the podcast for this week. I'm going to try to get you guys the other one for Friday, like I had promised last week. And maybe, you know, I'll try to catch up. I'll get back to maybe four, because that's what I think I owe everybody. So get back to four episodes. Thanks again for listening to Double Feature, Double Cross. I hope you guys liked it. Check us out. We are on Instagram at Double Feature, Double Cross. And we're on Twitter at the number 2 Feature, 2 Cross. And again, I'm John O'Connor, coming to you from Harlem, New York. And thanks again for listening. And if you guys want to hear anything, if you guys want to hear any movies reviewed or talked about, or you want me to talk about anything, or you want to tell me how much this sucks or how much you love it, please do look us up. Please send me a tweet. Please send me a message on Instagram. And until next time, you guys take it easy. Goodbye.